Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this, of course, is a show about love letters, how to write them, who should get them. And the answer to that one, of course, is anyone you care to send one to should get one for any reason whatsoever. A thank you, a fan letter, a love letter, a seduction, an introduction.
Letting someone gracefully out of your life,
yes,
if necessary.
Anything at all can be a love letter, and should be. Why not?
And every week on this show, we have a fabulous guest who shares a story, a challenge, whatever, and then we talk about the love letter.
Yes, and today's guest is Nancy Goldberg. And I happen to have a kind of a CV here for Nancy, and it is just extensive. She has done so much. She was raised in San Francisco. She is married to a man from Providence, Rhode Island. She lived in Washington, D.C. She was the national coordinator of the Days Remembrance Program for the United States Holocaust Memorial Council. And this goes on for two pages. The woman's activities and accomplishments are huge. In 1922, she received the Rhode Island State Leadership.
1922?
No, can't be.
Thank you. 1992, she received the Rhode Island. I know, we're not. 1920, and still here and talking. That could be a,
and looking good.
In 1992, she received the Rhode Island State Leadership Award for leadership in the JCRC. This just goes on. Accompanied women to court, did hotline, and worked in a shelter. Active in various programs in the Newport Art Museum. The quality and the accomplishment we're going to talk about today that Nancy is so excellent at is love and friendship. So, Nancy, please, I've talked too much already. Will you talk about this friendship?
Well, I would love to.
And you?
First of all, thank you so much for having me here. This is really fun. And it's not even scary.
Good.
Anyway, yeah, I could write a love letter to the world because I enjoy living so much. All the things there are to do. But this one today, you want me to talk about specifically is about my friend Dr. Felix Kolb, who passed away about 6 weeks ago. And it just brought up all kinds of things for me. First of all, being there at the moment of his death.
Well, why don't you talk about you and Felix and Susan, who is Felix's wife. Yes.
And their family. Well, I've been friendly. I met Susan and Felix when they first got married at least over 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I became very friendly with Susan a little bit later when she moved to Marin County. Well, she lived in Marin County, but just as our paths started to cross more in volunteer activities and business and stuff like that, we just became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been with their family through lots of different things that they've gone through, the marriages they've gone through, the birth of a grandson, different life events that have taken place, the things that you go through when you've known somebody for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because your friends become like family.
That's right.
And
do you have a big family here?
No, I don't, because mm-hmm. my family is not from here. They're from Chicago, and I came here when I was a little girl.
Oh, that's why they're raised in San Francisco. I
right,
wondered about that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, but so my family was mainly in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and when I came here at 5 years old, our friends, my parents made lifelong friends. Who were our family?
Can you say your family name?
It was Reback,
uh-huh.
and I went to Lowell High.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my family name.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I've had a few family names.
Yes, that's all right.
Because I've been married more than once, but
yes.
Anyway. And so, you know, your
it's the one that sticks that counts.
Oh, believe
you
me.
Know, that's,
this
yes.
one has been 28 years worth of wonderful sticking.
That's what I said. You'll tell us a little about him,
sure,
too.
I'd be happy to tell you about anything.
Okay.
So, anyway, so that's a very important thing. I was married in my best friend's home. I have met people throughout my life who have become like the women have become like sisters who I never had. Mm-hmm. The men have become like brothers.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful feeling.
It is a wonderful feeling.
To be able to love so easily and clearly.
I'm an emotional risk taker.
Uh-huh.
I will go where angels fear to tread emotionally.
Really? Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, I've done a lot of work in areas of San Francisco at the time in the where it was doing some volunteer social work. I've worked at City and County Hospital doing mm-hmm. work in locked psychiatric wards. I have a brother who is schizophrenic mm. and the field of mental illness. He passed away last year.
Ask if he's still alive.
Unfortunately, no. And I wish I had been there at the moment of his death, mm-hmm. but I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are people to me, and everybody has got a story, and everybody is worth something.
Right.
And I mean, you know, so it's easy to go out and just love the world to pieces. Sometimes you pick the wrong person to love.
Yes.
But doesn't mean you can't go on.
Right. And it also doesn't take anything away. You know, sometimes people talk about a failed romance as if it's a failure or detracts from you. And I don't ever see where you are not the better person for having offered love and friendship,
yeah.
even if it didn't work out for a lifetime.
I feel that way, too.
I can see you do.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
so go ahead.
I think it's absolutely true.
I like that you're saying that, what
oh,
you're
I'm
saying
glad
about
you
it.
Like
yes.
That. Well, it's easy to talk to somebody who thinks the same way you do. Then.
Very, I mean, yes.
But anyway, so you know, friends have become like family.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is, I don't take anything for granted.
How
Nothing.
Nice.
Nothing. I don't take today for granted. I don't take this conversation for granted.
And gratitude is the cornerstone of civilization, isn't it?
Should be.
Mm-hmm.
It should be. I don't feel that I'm owed anything. It's nice to sound so lofty right at this particular second. I'm sure that when I'm, you know, going through a bad spell, why did this have to happen to me?
Oh, sure.
But in time, I don't feel
that. That's an
that.
Intelligent question sometimes.
Of course, sometimes yeah. it is. But I've had long-term friendships. And they mean everything to me.
You want to talk about your marriage?
Oh, sure.
Because you
I'd
were,
be
smiling,
more than
you were
happy.
Smiling so when you said that.
Yes, I'm married to Larry. And Larry is a wonderful man. Now, Larry, I met Larry in Montreal when I was there at a conference, and I was introduced to him, and we went out that very night. He asked me to have dinner. Don't say no to a meal. No, I said, you know, it was wonderful. And by the end of that evening, I pretty much knew I was going to marry him. Now, there is a catch here. The catch, not as much for me, but a surprise for me, is that Larry, I am a lifelong Democrat, Larry is what is known as a Republican.
How interesting.
It has been. It has been for my friends.
So this is a mixed marriage.
This, my dear, is a mixed marriage.
Of the difficult sort sometimes, yes.
Well, the way other people view it. Now, Larry is extremely liberal socially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he, the things that I care about that people right at this particular moment, because it's in the headlines, that gay people can be married if they want to be. Larry cares about that they can be married if they want to be. We both believe in strong gun control laws. It doesn't take away that he's a Republican.
No, of course not, and it shouldn't.
But he's very strong on foreign policy, whereas I am much more a Democrat when it comes to feeling that, yeah, you do talk about things. You do try to negotiate.
And there's that component of fiscal responsibility, too.
There is that.
In Republican.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, I suppose that it makes sense. I mean, I'm ready to say, you want it here, you can have it. I mean, you can't can't have this particular thing that I've got around my neck,
right. But
you can have it. And I feel, and it's all because I do feel very, very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take anything for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm vice president of Jewish Family and Children's Services in San Francisco, San Francisco, Marin, Sonoma Peninsula.
And that's a caretaking group. So,
mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, I know how important it is,
right,
that people who don't have what we have can, you know, that it's shared.
But Republicans also make huge donations to philanthropic organizations.
Yes,
so, I mean, nothing
do.
Should stand
yes,
in the way
they do.
Here. Right.
Well, but when you live in a very partisan world, because I do a lot of advocacy,
mm-hmm.
I'm a national legislative chair. I'm a state legislative liaison. I do it locally. My thing is social issues and advocating for social issues. And I can tell you how partisan it is. And that partisanship is just eating us up.
Yes, yes.
And it's really ugly because we don't see the other side of, you know, nobody is all good and all bad.
Right.
And that goes with people who are Republicans as well as it does Democrats.
Yes.
I mean, this goes off the subject, but I have a lot of friends who weren't and aren't readily accepting of Larry or critical because he's a Republican.
I know. I have those same friends.
Oh.
I understand what you're talking about. And the sad thing is it demeans a friendship. And friendship is kind of what this is all about here
yes.
today. You know, getting beyond the...
But I'm very lucky in terms yeah. of having a wonderful husband.
Yeah.
And it's because of him, really because of him, that I am who I am today.
Oh,
and that
nice
I've been
to
able
that.
To accomplish what I've accomplished in my life today. And it's just been... It's been a wonderful 28 years, a
wonderful.
Fast 28 years.
Oh, good.
I feel like the most fortunate person in the world.
Well, I can see that you are from what you've accomplished and who you are in the world and the friendships you have. So I know what you're saying is true. And just to go back for a minute to this friendship.
Yes.
Because I know it was Larry was part of that also.
He's part of everything.
Yes.
And by this friendship, you're pointing to a letter, Janet. Should I just at this point remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time. We have fabulous guests. I hope you'll join us.
Thank you. So I think the love letter that you're going to write kind of explains the friendship. So let me say who gets the love letter.
Well, this love letter is... going to my dear friend Susan Kolb, and
go ahead.
And I and to my friends, because it's also about, you know, it's also about friendship, and I think that you know, it's important to hold on to the special moments that you have with your friends, and I want them to know it as well.
So I can see that the letter starts to your Felix.
Yes.
But you said you're writing it to Susan. So I like those love letters that get in the back door. Now, Felix, as you said, passed away 6 weeks ago.
About that.
Yes. So you're writing it to Felix.
Yes, I'm writing it to Felix.
Will you read it to us?
Oh, I would love to read it to
Please.
You.
Please.
Thank you. Dear Felix, your impact in the lives of those who loved you did not end with your passing. Quite the contrary, and I want to write to tell you just how much you have added to the lives of those who are close to you. Perhaps I shouldn't be trying to say anything except for me and just how wonderful the moments we shared have come to mean in my world, my inner world, the world I alone live in. You are the first person I was ever with at the exact moment of death. Death, that has always been the ultimate mystery and the most frightening of subjects, took on a new meaning to me that afternoon as I realized you had taken your last breath. And I, being alone in the room with you, with Rabbi Levi Darby standing with me. A friend asked me, how did I feel when that happened? And I responded that it was peaceful and not the least bit unnatural. No, she said, how else? She then asked about the intimacy of sharing this with you. It was at that moment I realized that that was the exact word, intimacy. Intimacy, that word reserved for those moments of shared depth of life experience, and even though you can't possibly know I was there, the moment will never leave me. It was like watching a birth, a moment of the other end of a life cycle. Then I have been thinking, my darling friend, of other life cycle events you and I have shared, the most joyous being that one of my performing your daughter's marriage ceremony. I then remembered another moment, the one day where you and I sat out on the deck you loved, looking at the view, and I was helping you write a ceremony so you could perform a wedding of your nephew. Those were such life-affirming events. That was so lovely. Did I ever thank you for letting me help you? Thank you. Most of all, above all else, I have thought about my own marriage and how much my own husband means to me. I have thought about how the time goes so quickly and just how the little things we get angry about are nothing, but how much the little things we do to show love mean everything. The latter is what lasts, and I wish we could have spoken of that. Felix, one of the most touching things of moment for me is that my son came to the Shiva. He also came to the service for you. I can't begin to tell you how much it meant that he cared not only for you and your family, but for me and how I would be handling this. It was so very dear. Friendship, how I love my friends. I know that I am at the age where this is going to happen so much more. Yours is not the first death of a close friend that I have experienced, but yours is the most intimate because I was with you. Your Suzula, as you called her, dear Felix, is doing well. However, she is grieving your loss every day. She cannot shed even a jacket from your closet because it keeps you with her. It fills up that space that was yours. She sleeps on your side of the bed to feel closer. She loves you deeply. Your life together has given her strength, and I hope that we who are her friends are giving her the support she needs to go through this new part of life. Last week, on your anniversary, it was very difficult, but she was with some good friends who love you both, and that made it easier. Not easier, but easier. Nothing takes the place of your grandson, Colby. That is the light. That is the part of you that lives on through your children and grandson. Thank you for all that you shared with me. How honored I feel that I was your friend. Thank you for letting me be a part of your life and of your death. Yours, Nancila.
Oh, that was just wonderful. Thank you.
He was just wonderful.
I know he was. I know he was, and she's wonderful.
She's fabulous.
And what you've done here, you know, this kind of a love letter, it's so clearly a love letter to Felix, and that you're still talking to him is beautiful, and I suppose we will always. We always talk to people who are gone at moments.
I think by talking to him, you're really talking to yourself, too.
Sure. And every love letter you write, you're in there for yourself, too. You're getting the joy of reliving that and bathing in the positive. And that's an important thing. But that you're mailing it to Susan, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when she gets this, she will... You don't have to say anything that I'm writing this to Felix, but I'm sending it to you. It will be obvious to her, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you haven't mailed it yet, right?
Not yet. I have not mailed it.
Okay. Is it possible, and I know this is a long letter, is it possible...
What are you going to say?
What?
You're going to say, don't you love people who pre-guess what you're
going
to say?
No, I happen to love them a lot.
You are going to say, would I do it in longhand?
Yes.
I knew you'd say that.
Now, how do you feel about that? Too hard?
Since I've had computers in my life,
I know.
It's always too hard, isn't it? No, I would do that. If you asked me to do that, I'll do that.
I'll tell you why. Okay. I'm curious about something, and I ask people this all the time. When somebody hands you an old photograph, not 1922, like I said, but let's say from 1957, from 1943, one of those, you know, browned out photographs, what's the first thing you do?
I want to save it.
Well, after that. I mean, you've made that...
I want to frame it.
Most people say, I turn it over.
Oh, to see the date?
Uh-huh, in handwriting. To see the handwriting on the back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think about, and you're saying right, like you just didn't think of saying it, but
no.
You relate to it. Most people treasure something in handwriting to a degree that surpasses anything else.
Funny you should mention that.
Why?
Because when my mother passed away, mm-hmm. which is another letter I could have written, when my mother passed
away, back.
She had all these recipes.
Oh, yes.
And they were all in longhand. Mm-hmm. And what I did was, for my daughter's birthday, or maybe as a part of what I gave her after my mom passed away, mm-hmm. I gave her the... Right, you know, they were Xerox copies, but
right.
they were in my mother's handwriting because
yes.
I wanted to keep them.
Yes.
And one day she'll have them, but they were in my mother's handwriting, and I gave them to Lori.
And isn't the handwriting a treasure in itself?
Sure.
Because when you handwrite something, when you write a letter, we talk about this in our workshop, you know, you've touched it, your hands are on it. The person who gets it
has your DNA.
Uh-huh. That's a good pre-guess, too. You've licked that envelope shut. I mean, your DNA is all over this thing. They could clone you from, you know, you've touched it. You may have held it to your lips. But the person is feeling what has felt the touch of your hand. And it's a better letter. Not to mention that when your great-grandchildren find this someday in your handwriting, they will know. Somebody in generations to come is going to know something really beautiful about Nancela.
Well, it's a question of being able to read my handwriting,
well,
too.
You know, do it the best you can, and you'll have this as a backup somewhere.
I have saved letters from friends. Mm-hmm. I have got a box full.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And very few of them are on computer. You know,
right.
Very few of them are email. Most of them. And I have a very dear friend who passed away. Very, very close friend from Rhode Island, and he was a professor at the University of Rhode Island, and he taught English,
mm-hmm.
he taught Shakespeare, and he was just, as somebody I know said, he was, you know, he was the Shakespearean hippie,
mm-hmm.
and he used to send me letters in this perfect calligraphy, mm-hmm. and I have saved every single one of those. Every single one of his letters, each letter that he wrote me, especially after I went back to school, and what I should be taking and the courses I should be taking, were all a love letter.
Right.
That's everything right. he ever sent me.
And there is something so special about handwriting is your just most unique thumbprint.
Can I say his name?
You say anybody's name you want.
His name is Bill Menzel.
Okay.
And his wife, Karen, is going to come visit me. But I just have to say his name because it makes him closer to me
yes,
at this moment.
Yes, of course. I'm glad you did. Well, this is just beautiful. This is just beautiful. And I'm glad you... What kind of stationery will you use?
I love stationery. Mm-hmm. I love paper. I think some handmade paper. I'll go to the art store. And I will get, and that makes me write better, too.
Oh, good. And then you have to get a pen that the handmade paper will take, that it won't bleed. And
my friend Bill liked that, too.
Okay, good.
And he used special calligraphy pens.
Yes,
I personally will not be doing that.
Well, something that won't fade. I mean, this is your history in your handwriting, and it'll be found. And people are going to know a lot about you, your capacity to love and your capacity to express yourself and the value you put on friendship. And intimacy and bravery. So this is just beautiful. I thank you for sharing it with us.
I thank you for letting me share it with you.
And if you want to come back and do one to your mother another time and tell us about her,
sure.
Please do.
I will.
Well, Nancy, I want to go back to some couple of things that you said early on. And one of them was that you said it was so easy to talk to people who think like you. And so I'm sure that you encounter people that don't think like you, and so I'm curious, how do you respond to people who are not trusting of others like you are, people who think the world is full of stinkers?
Very, very good question, and I'll tell you why it's a good question. I talk to people who don't think like me all the time. In this particular instance, it's like you use a shorthand with people. But when you are advocating for something with somebody who does not think the way you do, and we advocate for people all the time.
Yeah.
But when
in
you,
your role as political advocacy.
Yes,
right.
Or social uh-huh. advocate. You have to be able to find a common ground with people. And that's searching for a common ground with somebody. It's the humanness that you both have that I find. Let's say, for instance, Teresa, you're in somebody's office and they have pictures of their family around. It's very easy to find that when you're looking at somebody's family. It's very easy to find it with a painting on the wall, with a book on the desk, with a memento that they might have around, with a plant that's growing. You can find it. Mm-hmm. And it's challenging and it's exciting to be able to talk to somebody who doesn't believe the way you do. To get rid of the rhetoric that goes on, that defensive posture, mm-hmm. that boils down to, I am me, you are you, we are talking about an issue. For instance, let's say I'm talking to somebody about autism. My grandson happens to be autistic. There is legislation now that I have lobbied on, I hate to use that word, that okay. I've advocated on in Washington, and that is now going around through the legislature through Karen Bass, and that we at Jewish Family and Children's Services are going to be taking up in a major way. There are people, this is something like cancer, mm-hmm. or like poverty. It doesn't just hit me as a Democrat, me as a woman. It hits everybody as an issue, and it's something that people can relate to. Some of the legislation that has been put through in Washington has been done by people who are Republican, who have children who are on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I find that, you know, speaking on this, I keep my grandson Adam in my mind. I keep my daughter-in-law Angela and my son Jonathan in my mind. And even though I might not be mentioning their names, they are there, and I can relate to what this is. I can relate to issues of trying to make someone understand poverty. That I'm not doing this just on behalf of Jewish Family and Children's Services. I'm doing it on behalf of Catholic Services. I'm doing it on behalf of Asian Services, Latino Services, things that they also are lobbying on. And that somebody who is on the other side of this, who might have other issues about this, they also have those people in their district who are going through this.
So you try to get beyond the differences and yes. find the commonality.
What ties you together.
And the humanness.
What ties us together,
yes,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking that.
I can tell you're very good at it.
That's a skill worth developing.
Because
Absolutely.
We do live in a world where we have to talk to people. And, you know, you talked about friends who had trouble with your having been married a Republican. I think that's ludicrous. I remember in grammar school being taught very specifically that you don't have to agree with what a man says, but you have to defend to the death his right to say it. And I think we've slipped past
we
that a little.
Gone,
uh-huh.
We have gone beyond that.
Somebody forgot that. We need Mrs. Heaston back to my third grade teacher to drive that home.
Right. Well, at this point, I'm sorry to say our time is nearly out, but I do want to remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time. We have a website. If you enjoyed this program as much as Janet and I did, you can also listen to many of our past programs on the website. Just click past programs, and you can also contact us.
Yes, and that's www.loveletterslive.com. And please remember, as you can see here, I think, every week, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion. It is one for you, and it is one for the person who is going to get your letter.
Thank you, and thank all of our listeners. So until next time, from Teresa
and Janet, and we are the Love Letter Squad, we'll say goodbye.
Bye-bye.